that we were talking about the relationship
between the relationships between the students and the teachers and the families. Mm-hmm. Were very close relationships. A lot of demand was made of the students. My first teaching job, I had 41 first graders. You know, you talk about class size. And I was a new teacher. Everybody in that school worked extremely hard. Those 41 kids had to learn how to read. Mm-hmm. That's all there was to it. They could not go on to the next mm-hmm. grade unless they knew how to read. And I had a good many black students in my room. I couldn't see any difference between their motivation and anybody else's. Mm-hmm. The teachers made them really, really work hard. And we'd send for the parents if anything happened that we didn't like. And the parents would come running up to school and we'd get everything straightened out. But our classes were large and those kids had to learn. Of course, they had a great respect for school. Mm-hmm. It was a nice place to mm-hmm. come. And it was a nice old-fashioned school. And with the exception of very few kids, mm-hmm. at the end of the year, they knew how to read first readers right. and parallel first readers, and they went on to second grade.
Did you have any other ethnic groups in the South
yeah.
End at that time?
Greeks, there are a number of Greeks, a mm-hmm. number of Polish people. There were very few Hispanics, mm-hmm. a few, not many during mm-hmm. that period in Bridgeport. That was a little before, you know, numbers mm-hmm. of them came to Bridgeport. But lots of other, some Hungarians. Mm-hmm. And you had a nice mix in your classroom of, you know, a lot yeah. of different backgrounds of children. And all getting along well, except for the kinds of arguments and fights that kids pick if you get in front of them in mm-hmm. line or if you take something that belongs to them. Right. That kind of thing went on, of course. But nothing that I could call really racial. I mm-hmm. thought the relationships were good and everybody got along mm-hmm. very well, as far as I could see. I thought teacher attitude and pupil relationships were extremely mm-hmm. good in that school.
Mm-hmm. During this time, or a little before this time, you said you got married and mm-hmm. and you had your daughter, I believe. Mm-hmm. Was it difficult working and raising a child at the same time?
Well, at the time I had built a house in Stratford, we had built a house in Stratford, and my grandmother, my mother's mother, mm-hmm. had come to live with me. And she was a very straight-laced woman, very demanding, mm-hmm. Very knowledgeable, knew how to do wonderful things, knew how to sew, was a wonderful cook, and was very particular. Mm-hmm. And she came to live with us, and which was great, because she would get my daughter off to school. You know, we'd mm-hmm. all get up and get ourselves ready, but I didn't have to worry about what was happening mm-hmm. back home, because right. I knew that grandmother mm-hmm. was there
was
to get my daughter off and to receive her back home mm-hmm. and to teach her many, many things that mm-hmm. she knew how to do, which was quite mm-hmm. a wonderful thing. So I was fortunate enough to have my grandmother live with me from the time my daughter was about 3 or 4 years old until my daughter went to college.
Oh.
And she died at 92. So she really had a long stretch and was very key mm-hmm. in helping me to raise my daughter.
What was Stratford like at the time?
Again, Stratford had very few blacks. My daughter went to Birdsey School, mm-hmm. Which was in the south end of Stratford,
right.
and there were a few families in the south end of Stratford, so there were a few blacks mm-hmm. in her school. I think if they weren't in Birdsey School, however, they weren't anywhere mm-hmm. else, you know, mm-hmm. except maybe one or two somewhere else, but very few. So she was raised with some students down at Birdsey School and at Johnson Junior High School, mm-hmm. which was built while she was in elementary school. And again, a pretty isolated kind of life, because there weren't a whole lot of mm-hmm. blacks around us. But I guess
you kind of train your children the way you've been trained. And she was so busy with Brownies and Girl Scouts and Sterling House and music lessons and dancing lessons and schoolwork that there wasn't a great deal for her and her church. She too went, but I stayed at Newfield Church and she grew up in Newfield Church. So between church and home and school, there were lots of things. She was a very busy girl. And so I don't think that she felt as though she was lacking a great deal. And she had friends in the neighborhood and friends at school. But, you know, that was a small town with a lot, without a lot of blacks. I think fairly good relationships. I felt a good place to bring up a child in, and a good school system in which she could grow also.
Now I'm going to move on to the 60s. Did you participate in any of the civil rights movements during the 60s?
I was one of the founders of ABCD, which was the action agency that was formed around 1963, 1964. In the mid-60s, which I think came to grips with an awful lot of the needs, you know, of black folks. I also was associated with the NAACP in the 1960s, which I, again, feel was a catalyst for a lot of action that went on. I'm a life member of the NAACP and strongly believe in what they're doing. We were never able to get an Urban League formed in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and maybe one day we will, but efforts were made, and I was part of committees and meetings where we talked about having an Urban League, and that didn't come to fruition. Way back there in the 1960s, we began to talk about school desegregation, and people didn't even know what desegregation meant, but I remember going down to Bridgeport Library, and NAACP with Charlie Tisdale and June Shageloff and Ella Anderson, a whole lot of people addressing that whole problem of school desegregation way back there, just prior to that 1966 report coming out about Bridgeport schools and the need for desegregation. Remember a lot of activity that went on during the 1960s that Bridgeport may not have been directly involved in, but was watching across the nation and helping with collections and efforts and things the NAACP was doing to send money where it would help. I remember the Freedom Fund and all the fighting that went on and all the plea for funds so that the legal defense of people who were caught up in activities in other places could get the appropriate legal help.
Do you think there was any one person in Bridgeport that might have been considered a civil rights leader?
Well, John Lancaster was very much a person involved with NAACP for years and years and years. McDonald Isaacs was another who was very involved with that. Ella Anderson always stands out as a real fighter, and she was president of the NAACP when a lot of things went on, where NAACP got right out in the vanguard for action that they felt needed to be taken in a lot of things. She stands out very much. Charlie Tisdale stands out in his efforts with the NAACP. I'm sure you always leave people out that you should remember, but, you know, as I think about it, those were some of the real leaders and fighters for justice for a lot of people.
Now, across the country, there were riots and things like that. Did anything similar to that occur in Bridgeport?
I cannot remember in the 60s. I just think of Bridgeport as being supportive to efforts across the nation. Kind of the listening ear and the sending of money, sympathetic, doing what we could to help others. I don't remember incidents of things that, you know, really erupted in Bridgeport in the 60s. And maybe it's just that I have forgotten it because nationally there were so many big things that happened. Certainly as a result of legal matters, some changes came. When I was growing up, you couldn't go to Reed's or Holland's or any of those stores and sit in a tea room. You just could not. You could go into the stores and shop. You could not go into restaurants and eat. And that includes the restaurant at Reed's department store, at Holland's that had a restaurant. You could not do that. Now, as the civil rights opened up the rights for everybody and discarded the separate but equal idea, it opened the doors to everybody for those kinds of accommodations in hotels and in restaurants. We never had to sit any particular place on a bus in Bridgeport. But we could not eat in regular establishments. You just didn't go inside those places to eat. Someone says to me that at one time we had to sit in the balcony of the theaters. I don't remember the big downtown theaters and having to sit in the balcony. I just don't remember it. Maybe that was true. But I can't comprehend it now. I don't remember having to go up into the balcony. But some of those things were understood and people did them automatically and nobody had a contest because, as they used to say, you know your place and you just did what you were expected to do. But I do know that we could not go into the restaurants and the hotels.
Did you have any difficulty getting your position as a principal?
I took a civil service test and came out number one, so they had no, you know, they had no choice but to give me the first job on the list. I have to say I would not have become a principal if a very, very precious white supervisor had not told me I ought to be one. You know, I really enjoyed being a teacher and had not thought about administration. But my supervisor told me one day she thought I ought to be a principal. And I decided if she thinks so, I guess I ought to be. So I went down to New York University and did all my graduate work and got my credentials. And then when the civil service test, in those days you had to take a civil service test to go into administration. Civil service test came up, I prepared to take it. And you know, I guess about 40 or 50 people took it. Mostly men, just a few women, but mostly men, who got Army service, which I didn't have. So I was delighted, because I didn't think I could make it against them with all the credits that they could get that I couldn't get. But I came out number one, and that meant the next job was mine. So I didn't have to fight for that. That was their own system, which I truly believe we have to know a lot about, and that we have to go through that system and decide that we're going to beat the system by really preparing to get in that system and come out on top. So anyhow, I did not have a hard time because of the process of becoming a principal. So I can't say that I did. I didn't have a hard time becoming a teacher because, again, I went through the system and waited my turn. And I knew what my turn was, and I got my turn. Did have a little hard time becoming a superintendent.
Well, you're not.
And that's because the system was truly a subjective one. And that's a hard system to beat.
Right. You know? When you became principal, how was your relationships with the parents, with the teachers? How did they accept you?
Loved it. I was principal of two schools, and neither one is in existence now. Washington School next to St. Augustine Church, now it's a parking lot for St. Augustine Church, and Wheeler School, which is now a center for ABCD and for some other programs in the city. But two wonderful little schools, each with 8 rooms, each with around 300, 350 students, and I was principal of 2 schools. I had to, you know, go between the two. But not only a couple of blocks apart, but wonderful schools, fairly well integrated, with kids who needed a lot of help. I'm not going to say poor, but, you know, without a whole lot of advantages and a whole lot of money. But wonderful children and good parents who related very well to me. Well, I thought fine teachers, just wonderful teachers. And I liked the experience very much. I had to be asked to come out of that because I liked what I was doing. A very family kind of school, little old schoolhouses with kids, but it was, they were attractive and colorful, and in those days it was unusual to have rooms that were painted pretty pink, pretty blue, pretty lavender. We had pretty painted rooms and teachers who did artistic and creative things and kids who loved their teachers and liked their principal. And we were just, you know, big happy families. Yeah, really, really nice. And I would have stayed in something like that, except I was asked, you know, to do something different.
Could you tell us a little bit about your experience as a superintendent of Bridgeport Schools?
Well, I guess if it weren't for the public, I may not have become a superintendent of schools, but it was something that I thought I had earned, because I was an assistant to the superintendent of schools. I was an assistant superintendent of schools, and I was the one, when the superintendent went anywhere, he left me in charge. And urged me, when he got ready to leave, to apply to be the next superintendent. And I wasn't that anxious to be a superintendent of schools. I was very happy being an assistant superintendent in charge of all the elementary schools. And then I had been an assistant superintendent in charge of a district, a whole section, including elementary, junior high, and high schools, too. But when he left, I was in charge of all the elementary schools, and he had urged me to apply for the superintendency. And I didn't think it would be difficult, because I was used to being at board meetings and taking charge when he wasn't there. But anyhow, I think most people know that the contest really became a heated one when they realized that a black woman wanted the job. And a whole lot of things were done that shouldn't have been done to try to discourage me from pushing for that job. But I finally got myself a very influential lawyer, and I think I had all the documentation to prove that I was being bypassed for reasons that were unfair. And the Board of Education finally realized that if I took the case to court, which I fully intended to do when I decided I wanted it, they changed their minds and decided they would invite me to be the superintendent of schools. However, I do have to say that they had chosen 2 committees to search for a superintendent, and each time they chose a committee, I applied and was interviewed. And each time the committee came out with a recommendation that I get the job. So I did not feel that it was any kind of influence that gave me the job. It was their own committee recommendations that they would not recognize. So anyhow, I got the job, and I feel that for 5 years I was able to provide leadership to a school system that I think was very troubled. Because when I went into that particular position, we were on the edge of a teacher strike, number one, that greeted me immediately, and number two, we were headed right into the middle of a court desegregation suit. The teacher strike, as everyone knows, became a very nasty kind of thing, and teachers went to jail in that teacher strike, which was almost the first in the nation to have something like that happen. And possibly should not have happened, but it did. And then the court desegregation suit is still going on. So during the whole 5 years I sat in that chair, the school system had a very, very rough time. So it was not an easy time. You know, it was a difficult time. But I think that we accomplished a lot of things. We were able to go to court and to take some plans that helped us from getting somebody else that the court would have assigned here to run mm-hmm. a school system. And some plans that I think can work pretty well. We took a magnet school plan and we took a redistribution of pupils plan, which Bridgeport began to institute right away and promised to build some new schools and to do some other kinds of things. So I think that kind of attitude that my staff and the board and I were able to work with prevented us from being treated very summarily by a court which was watching us very carefully. I felt that I was able to bring aboard a great many minority leadership persons who could contribute to the school system. And so during the time that I was there, we had a number of principals appointed, a number of people in supervisory jobs, a number of teachers, and I think that Black folks have needed a friend in court. I think they had one, which has been important to education in Bridgeport. But it was not an easy 5 years because I don't think the administration that we had in the city during those 5 years was a sympathetic administration to education. And so that was a battle mm-hmm. that had to be fought all the time. And wasn't that helpful mm-hmm. to a school system? And I think we're still suffering somewhat mm-hmm. from things like that. But I think education is in good hands and, you know, will progress.
Okay, well, in closing, is there anything that I might not have asked you that you think is important and would like to tell us?
I am very concerned that the motivation of young people in Bridgeport is less than it should be. I'm very concerned that the image of education for many young minority students is not as high as it should be, or their aspirations are not what they ought to be. I'm very concerned about the number of kids that are just hanging around on Bridgeport streets doing nothing. Mm. I think there needs to be an awful lot of stimulation on everybody's part if we are to survive as a race, that our young people are going to have a lot more input from a whole lot more people to move them along from where they are now. And I'm not talking about families that can do for themselves. I'm talking about a lot of young children that don't have parents and don't have the interest of their homes to push them along and who need a push from somewhere. And it probably is going to have to rest on the schools. It's probably going to have to rest on the churches. And it's probably going to have to rest on the NACP and agencies to really be concerned about what's happening to the young people in the city of Bridgeport, because I think there is too little aspiration, too little motivation, and perhaps on the public's part, too little concern about what's happening to the young people. And thereby hangs the strength of a race, the strength of a city, and certainly the strength of a nation.
Thank you. We hope that as children listen to these tapes, they'll get some inspiration. Thank you very much, Mrs. Johnson.